What is going on, everyone? I'm your host, Kevin Munoz. This is the Leo Podcast Tech Corner, where we talk about all things tech. For today's tech news episode, I have four juicy stories for you. First up, coming this September, Apple is gearing up to show us all the new iPhone 14, along with new Macs, low-end and high-end iPads, and three new watch models. Our second story, Google employees petition bosses for abortion policy changes. For our third story, China against the recently passed CHIPS and Science Act in the United States. And for our fourth and final story, a new report is shining a spotlight on potential privacy concern loopholes in apps that collect women's personal health information following the reversal of Roe v. Wade. All this coming up on today's free episode. Today is Monday, August 22nd. If you want early access to episodes and bonus episodes, you can find that right now on our patreon.com/LatinAmericaNeo. And if not, then enjoy this one. For our first story, coming this September, Apple is gearing up to show us all the new iPhone 14, along with the new Macs, low-end and high-end iPads, and three whole new Apple Watch models. Personally, I'm most excited for the Apple Watches. I absolutely love mine for working out and tracking my runs, and I only have the third generation, so I'm actually excited to go over with you guys what's brand new in these new models coming next month. Now, as some of you might know, Apple goes pretty hard on their yearly events when showing off the new world, their new products. However, word on the street is that Apple again intends to stream their event online instead of doing an in-person gathering. Now, starting off with the iPhone 14, according to Bloomberg, the iPhone 14 will look similar to the iPhone 13, but they will eliminate the 5.4-inch mini version and add a model with a 6.7-inch screen, which will actually be Apple's first time launching a non-Pro iPhone with a display of that size. Now, it does look like they are planning bigger changes for the iPhone 14 Pro line. Apple will replace the front-facing camera's cutout, which we know as the notch, with a pill-shaped hole for Face ID sensors and a hole-punch-sized area for the camera, which would result in slightly more screen space. They are also adding a faster chip to the iPhone 14 Pro, but will keep the A15 chip from the iPhone 13 in the regular iPhone 14 models. The most significant change for the iPhone 14 Pro will be the camera system, which will look slightly bigger to us. The Pro models are going to gain a 48-megapixel wide-angle camera, along with a 12-megapixel ultra-wide and telephoto sensors. They are also planning on improvements to video recording and the battery life. Now, moving on to my favorite, and as I mentioned earlier, what I'm really excited for is the Apple Watches known as Series 8. Apple will be adding features for women's health and body temperature sensors. I think tracking your health is important, especially for women, but my only concern for women's health especially, and also something that I'll be talking about later in today's episode, is the concerns of privacy revolving around period tracking and pregnancy apps. As for the temperature sensors, I'm really looking forward to that feature and was honestly surprised that it wasn't already a feature in earlier versions of the Apple Watch. The standard watch will apparently look similar to those of Series 7, but the new Pro model will be targeting sportier consumers, which, like I said, is the only reason I love the Apple Watch, so I'll definitely be eyeing this one. The Pro model will have a larger display, rugged titanium case, new fitness tracking features, and more battery life. They are also planning on a new Apple Watch SE, which will be a low-cost smartwatch option with a faster chip. Also coming to September is iOS 16, which is the software that will be running on the next iPhones, and watchOS 9, the next Apple Watch operating system. Lastly, Apple is working on an updated low-end iPad with an A14 chip and USB-C port, as well as new iPad Pro models with M2 chips for later this year and the launch of the new Macs before the end of the year, while they work on versions of the Mac Mini and the MacBook Pro with M2-based processors. For our second story, over 650 workers at Google are demanding that they offer abortion benefits to contractors, suspend donations to anti-abortion politicians, and better protect users from abortion-related disinformation and police requests. These requests were made last week through a petition to executives over concerns across the United States since the Supreme Court ruling in June that raised the possibility of new restrictions on abortion and reproductive care in over half of the 50 states. Of course, there's no word from Google on the petition, but many companies, including Google, have established policies to assist employees seeking abortions. The workers at Google said temporary staff and contractors also should receive those benefits. Benefits like reimbursements for travel to states where the procedure remains legal. Alphabet, which is the parent company of Google, employs over 174,000 people globally, has said that although it sets some standards, it cannot fully dictate policies of outside vendors. The petition also mentions that Alphabet shouldn't direct political contributions towards groups and candidates campaigning to restrict abortion access. Google's already paused at least once before in 2021 after the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. They said that it would pause donations to the Republicans who voted against certifying that Joe Biden won the election. Petitioners also demand that user searches concerning abortion on Google must never be saved, handed over to law enforcement, or treated as crime, along with echoing demands from abortion advocates who for years have said that Google should remove search results for crisis pregnancy centers which attempt to dissuade people from abortion. To which Google did respond, saying that it does remove misleading results that are reported. Don't go anywhere, we'll be right back after this quick break. You're listening to the Leo Podcast. I'm Kevin Munoz. Support for today's episode comes from my Patreons. If you enjoy the show and are looking for bonus content and to further support the show, then head on over to patreon.com/latinamericaneo or visit my website latinamericaneo.org to join the growing Leo Podcast community, because the learning doesn't stop with this episode. There's also some sick merch on my website, everything from shirts, coffee mugs, and tote bags. All info will be at the bottom in the show notes. Now let's get back to today's episode. For our third story, China recently lashed out at a $52 billion program to expand American chip making, saying that the landmark blueprint contains elements that violates the fair market principles and that it targets Beijing's own efforts to build a semiconductor industry. Now, this all came about because of the U.S. CHIPS Act that was signed into law this month and part of an overall package of incentives worth in excess of $200 billion intended to give China's rivals a helping hand. The U.S. legislation contains clauses that specifically prohibit companies that receive funding from expanding production of advanced chips in China. So this means that companies would be forced to choose between the U.S. and China when looking at it long term. The exceptions only apply to expanding facilities related to legacy semiconductors and not cutting-edge chips. These would be companies like Qualcomm and Intel that produce premium processors for PCs and smartphones, not legacy chips. The restrictions brought on by this act serve to guard against potential for Chinese companies to copy cutting-edge technologies, but Beijing says that the chips bailout is discriminatory. In the past years, the U.S. has ramped up a campaign to try and contain China's chip-making ambitions, which is a source of increasing frustration to Beijing. Washington is even tightening restrictions on the country's firms, increasingly limiting the kind of chip-making equipment that American companies can export to Chinese customers, while also enlisting allied countries so that key suppliers like the Netherlands ASML Holding NV, and Japan's Nikon Corp join a technology blockade. Sales by domestic chip sector, the largest, grew 18% in 2021, though that's expected to slow to 15% this year as the economic slowdown and COVID lockdowns impact the demand. The passing of the CHIPS Act came about a time when China's leadership is increasingly frustrated with its year-long failure to develop semiconductors that can replace U.S. circuitry, despite allocating more than $100 billion to the sector. China President Xi Jinping planned to invest trillions of dollars to strengthen the country's tech sector and reduce reliance on foreign suppliers, an investment that could be compromised by current economic uncertainty. China's economy is still struggling to ramp up from COVID-19 closures, with manufacturing falling to a five-month low in April. Beijing's response to the CHIPS Act could come in the form of product embargoes or enforced regulations. For our fourth and final story for today, a new report is shining a spotlight on potential privacy concern loopholes in apps that collect women's personal health information following the reversal of Roe v. Wade. This report that was released last Wednesday by the Mozilla Foundation, a nonprofit organization that advocates for online privacy, concludes that among the 25 popular reproductive health apps, most apps were actually found to have very vague privacy policies surrounding how they will share data with law enforcement. 18 of the products earned Mozilla's label of privacy not included. So what this means is that users' data may not be secure, and 8 failed to meet the foundation's minimum security standards. Among the apps that were examined by Mozilla staff researchers were pregnancy apps, period trackers, wearables, and all products that collect personal reproductive information like weight, birth plans, pregnancy journals, and doctor appointments. The only app, Yuki, spelled E-U-K-I, was ranked in Mozilla's best of the category. The app Natural Cycles earned a commendable mention by Mozilla. Other wearables and apps that rank near the top of Mozilla's list include Garmin, Apple Watch, Whoop Strap 4, Aura Ring, and Fitbit. According to Jen Caltride, a co-author of the report, anything that you share is no longer secure, and that's just an expectation that we should all have if we share something with these apps and it's not stored locally. If the app collects information about your sexual activity, your sexual orientation, your moods, symptoms, pregnancy, your due date, any of that, just expect that information is no longer yours to control. Pregnancy and period tracking apps have millions of users every month who utilize the technology to better understand and help control their reproductive health. The apps can tell you when to expect your next period, if you might be pregnant, and how far along you are, when you are the most fertile or conceiving, and what sorts of symptoms you usually experience. Reproductive health apps' ability to share data with law enforcement is a real concern for women who live in states where abortion had been limited or banned. For those that do use the apps, you should be able to find an app's privacy policy when you download the app on your phone. According to the report, you should be wary of privacy policies that are either too short or too long, and if companies can't clearly articulate what data they're collecting, how they're using that data, and who they're sharing that with, then it's definitely a red flag. Also, if you download an app and can't find a privacy policy, then you probably shouldn't download that app. Additionally, apps that are made by companies based in Europe actually tend to have tighter privacy restrictions than companies based in other locations, which does include the United States. That's all for today on the Leo Podcast. I'm Kevin Munoz, and as always, feel free to send me a message with your thoughts or with any interesting topic that you'd like to see covered. And for those of you on Patreon, I will see you in the bonus episode. Otherwise, I'll see you all in next week's episode. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a family or a friend and rate it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It helps tremendously in order to bring more awareness and educational resources to our community. For more information and to stay up to date with what I'm doing, you can follow me on Instagram at LatinAmericaNeo. And if you need more information and resources, you can visit my website, LatinAmericaNeo.org. I'm Kevin Munoz. This has been the Leo Podcast, and I'll see you next time.